last as long as 50% of the population is below the median. Our next speaker is a gentleman who, in my opinion, is one of the best, if not, in fact, the best, analytical and investigative reporter working out of Washington, D.C. He has been a Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. He is the Washington editor of The American Spectator. He has written for The Spectator of London and many other publications. He is working with the speaker that you just heard on a forthcoming book on the very subjects that are under discussion. Would you please welcome discussing the topic Invisible Ink, Mr. Tom Bethel. Tom?
Thank you very much. So many of my lines have been stolen already tonight, but I wonder whether I have anything left to say, but however... Anticipated, right. I feel like telling you all, Mr. Lefebvre, don't shoot the messenger. The idea of the media is they like to think that they are messengers, just like newsmen and newsboys delivering the throwing the newspaper on your doorstep in the morning. In fact, a better way of thinking of them is more like people who operate a searchlight or a spotlight. And the platform from which on which the searchlight is placed is an implicitly socialist one, as Joe pointed out. The arguments which they propound are not couched in the well-known socialist phrases of yore: workers' paradise, running dogs, Wall Street lackeys, and so on. We don't hear anything like that. What we do, the arguments are propounded in what I prefer to call invisible ink. And with the help of Mr. Bob Jockers of the Reader's Digest and their excellent computer retrieval system called Nexus, I have been trying to observe or discover this invisible ink. Nexus is a very interesting computer system. I don't know whether you're familiar with it. It can retrieve from a number of newspapers and magazines, including the Washington Post, the Christian Science Monitor, Newsweek, Business Week, The Economist, BBC, and numerous others. Not just the subject of the story or the author of the story, but individual words from the story. I just couldn't believe it when Bob told me that this is what they could do a few months ago. However, I've since found that they can get individual words and phrases, or words that are placed within a sentence, two words within 10 words of one another, let's say, and you've put those two words together, like, for example, Reagan, bellicose, and boom, out comes the computer, all of the uses, all of the instances in which these two words have come together within a certain distance of one another in the last, in that case, since Reagan got to office. So the wonderful thing is that you're able to expose the invisible ink by then getting repeated instances of words and phrases that are otherwise would be rather obscure. Joe mentioned one, building a new society, which is not quite a cliche. I mean, it was used recently by Barbara Crissett in the New York Times and by Stephen Rosenfeld in the Washington Post. It's been almost 3 years since a group of young rebels overthrew the government of Sir Eric Gerry in Grenada and began to build a new society. How do you think Domingo is going to grow to put aside his sense of personal grievance and bereavement when he grows up and to accept a responsibility to build a new Salvadorian society? Leonid Brezhnev, the Soviet Union will continue to do its utmost to see that the peoples of the socialist countries can, in calm and peaceful conditions, fulfill the great task of building a new society. And there are 10 others from Kabul Home Service, East German Radio, Peace and Progress, Hanoi Home Service, George Marchais, the French Communist Party, and so on. And when you put them all together, it just, you get the invisible ink shows through on the page in the most extraordinary way. So here are a few more examples. Words and phrases that are worth paying attention to if you happen to spot them. Activist does not normally identify the cause in which the person is active. For example, Eleanor Smeal would be described as an activist. Phyllis Schlafly would be right-wing, probably might be right-wing activist, but it would identify the cause in her case, not in the case of Eleanor Smeal. Adversary, a polite description of the Soviet Union. You will not see the Soviet Union described as an enemy. On the other hand, you will see the word enemy in the words of the cartoon character Pogo: "We have met the enemy and he is us." Superpowers is another one. We implying a moral parity between the United States and the Soviet Union. We are no better than them. Apathy. This tells you that the population at large is insufficiently enthusiastic about political solutions to problems. Here's a familiar one, and here's one where the invisible ink, as it were, is beginning to show through. Aspirations, legitimate, always legitimate, you might say, legitimate aspirations, and socialist. When the El Salvador voters rejected the process of taking land away from people who own more than 1,200 acres and transferring it to the government, which is called land reform, another phrase that's worth noting, this was not an expression of legitimate aspirations. However, the phrase legitimate aspirations has been used more recently by one or two others, including the well-known propagandist, Mr. Phil Nicolaides, who I think somehow or other infiltrated the meeting tonight, in his famous memorandum to the VOA. And it was also used by Jean Kirkpatrick recently in a speech that she gave. So you can get this kind of semantic retrieval that takes place with certain words and phrases. Solidarity is an obvious example, too, where the Polish workers used a phrase which had been securely in the socialist camp and used it to make essentially anti-socialist arguments. Bipartisan. I have written down, beware the conspicuous pose of neutrality. The Congressional Budget Office is said to be bipartisan, and the numbers that the computer, which cranks out its numbers, has essentially left-wing assumptions built into it, or did until recently. And I saw in the New York Times today that there's an organization called Ground Zero, described as a nonpartisan educational project about nuclear war, now planning a week-long series of seminars, teach-ins, dances against death, run... run for your life marathons, and other activities at 450 campuses, all aimed at sensitizing Americans. Sensitizing is another word. If you see the word insensitivity, as another word, insensitive implies out of harmony with socialist ideas. All right. Cold War rhetoric, criticism of the Soviet Union. Communism. As Mitch Dechter pointed out in a recent issue of Contentions, the publication of Committee for the Free World, communism tends nowadays not to be overtly criticized or even characterized in the press.
It's described as being an outmoded system, an obsolete ideology, one that cannot adapt to change. Communists aren't 10 feet tall. In a recent issue of Newsweek,
They had an article about the transfer of leadership. Leadership, notice. I used the word. And then they had an accompanying article about the economic system called a system that cannot work, or a system that doesn't work. And in the story, they repeatedly said, they talked about Soviet economic planning. The Soviet version of the system was not working. They didn't say that the central economic planning itself didn't work. So there is this attempt here to separate communism from the particular embodiment of it in one country, namely the Soviet Union, in order to defend the principle of communism itself by excommunicating the country that violates it. And again, you'll see the phrase excesses, Soviet excesses in the news media. They deplore Soviet excesses. Again, wrong applications, as it were, of the system, but not the system itself. Here's a good one, compassion. Compassion is a euphemism for compulsion. Compassion is what you feel when you make out a check to the IRS. The architect of compassion is Tip O'Neill. And it's next one, Stan already used as another case of semantic. The fact that he used it indicated that it is the invisible ink is showing through. Simplistic solutions to complex problems. If you see that phrase, you know that there is an attempt to repudiate some quasi-socialist element in the present system by moving to, for example, a market alternative. In fact, there are in many cases, there really are simple solutions to complex problems. An example being in 1979 when they had the gas lines. This was a very complex problem, the problem of allocating gasoline all over the country. And the solution to it was to remove the price and allocation controls that had created that problem. People would have said that was a simplistic solution. Conservative era in which we live. The computer had many instances of conservative era. Now, the Philadelphia Society may be growing, and conservatives may, in fact, win elections, but I put it to you that in legislated outcome, the country is not moving to the right. It is moving to the left and has been steadily moving to the left. I could give you numerous instances in which, in legislated outcome or in judicial outcome, the country has moved to the left. I have not been able to find anybody who can come up with an instance in which the country has, in fact, moved to the right. If any of you know of any, I'd be interested to hear about it. The word conservative itself is pejoratively qualified in many instances, except in cases where the conservative in question is himself moving to the left, in which case he will be kindly referred to. An example right now is Goldwater. Otherwise, they will have hardline, arch, diehard, rawhide, and ultra, correct. It is also used selectively to identify organizations and people, for example, public interest law firms. You will find most public interest law firms are just called public interest law firm. However, if it is in pursuit of some conservative goal, it is called a conservative public interest law firm. Controversial alerts the reader to the existence of non-explicit liberal disapproval. The word crackdown, it's controversial, is used in news stories which are not called news analysis, they're just straight news. Crackdown, Bernard Lewis of Princeton pointed out to me that the uncritical use of this term in the Polish context implies the restoration of order to unruly anarchy. Polish crisis is another interesting one. The term was frequently used before the, quotes, crackdown. Many hundreds of examples in the computer of Polish crisis. However, you don't see Polish crisis now. This shows you the extent to which the news media tends to see the world through the eyes or from the point of view of the Soviet Union. And then we get the spectrum of labels: despot, dictator, strongman, ruler, autocrat, leader. Dictator is quite common, referring to people like Somoza, Franco, Ferdinand Marcos, and others, including Amin. However, there are no Soviet bloc dictators that I have been able to discover in the New York Times, which does not, unfortunately, work with the computer, or the Washington Post, as Joe said. All of them are referred to as leaders. Other examples of leaders are Erich Honecker of East Germany, Morris Bishop of Grenada, Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua, Kim Il-sung of North Korea, General Jaruzelski, and Fidel Castro. All are frequently, routinely referred to as leader. Discriminate against is an interesting one. Bob Jones University, in the recent controversy, was extremely ferociously attacked. The university admits blacks, but prevents interracial dating. Does it discriminate against blacks, or does it discriminate between races? There's a big difference between discriminating between and discriminating against. I mean, you could just as easily say that they discriminate against whites in that instance. Just a couple of quick economic ones. Redistribution. The word suggests that the world's wealth was initially dealt out unfairly and must be redealt. A new deal. But people are not dealt the cards of wealth, they make them. This is an example of rhetorical wishful thinking. Those who use the phrase would like wealth to be something that is distributed. See trickle-down, which is a characterization of our welfare system, and in fact was used to try to characterize capitalism. This word shows the extent to which the left controls terminology right now. Another example from economics I just mentioned is tax cut, which is very misleading because it blurs the distinction between tax rates and tax revenues. If you cut tax rates, you don't necessarily cut tax revenues. Just using the word tax cut, therefore, completely undermines the rationale of supply-side economics and the Laffer curve in two words. Economic democracy. In a recent 60 Minutes, on Santa Monica, where Tom Hayden and his friends are active, a lady who had run for city council said, "You can't sell socialism door to door. You have to call it something else, economic democracy." A quite astute observation. Equity, new word for equality. Flexibility advocates the abandonment of principles which liberals disapprove of. Fraud and abuse in welfare. The Department of Health and Human Services themselves put out fraud and abuse statistics. By concentrating on the abuse of the system, of a system, you implicitly create the suggestion that the system itself would be perfect if only you could eliminate the abuse. They therefore distract attention from the argument, the whole argument against transferring income from one, taking money away from one group of people and giving it to another. Friends and foes alike, I have to thank Joe for spotting this one. There was a story in which it was suggested that we should surprise friends and foes alike in some negotiation that was taking place. How do you do that? By betraying our friends. Here's a good one, from the computer. Reagan, gaffe. The word gaffe. Numerous Reagan gaffes. The use of the word gaffe has strong social connotations, subtly and perhaps subliminally warning the reader that conservatism can get you into serious trouble, the worst kind of trouble, the kind of trouble where you go to a dinner party where it's black tie and you show up in blue jeans and then you use the wrong knife and fork. Gaffe, the thing that you really want to avoid more than anything. genuine democracy, well, I don't have to tell you, that's an extremely Orwellian phrase, meaning that they don't have elections. global negotiations sounds wonderful because it implies a solution to world problems. In fact, it means the inclusion of numerically superior third world representation in these negotiations who will be hostile to U.S. interests. And greed, desire to keep one's own money. There's a recent book by Robert LeCatchman called Greed Is Not Enough. And it's interesting to notice in that, and as in all other instances of the use of the word greed, is that people as a class are accused of greed, but individual greedy people are never identified. Mr. LeCatchman was not able to come up with one. Grow. We all know what grow means, except the truth of socialist positions. Gary Wills said of Edward Kennedy, you could see him subtly growing. and then there's the spectrum of labels that we saw in El Salvador, terrorist, guerrilla, insurgent, rebel, and opposition forces. But in El Salvador, the word terror only appeared in connection with one of the candidates that people were voting for, namely Mr. D'Aubusson. The people who were shooting at their fellow citizens going to the polls were rebels, opposition forces, and so on. Ideology. The word ideology is applied in the news media right now to people on the right or in the Kremlin. They do concede it on the extreme left, as it were, in the Kremlin itself. But anyone to the right of center, if he holds a position, he is accused of doing so for reasons of ideology, which implies that the position is, as it were, instinctive, just a gut feeling, not thought out, a position that's based on prejudice rather than open-mindedness. Impose one's views. We are told all the time now that the moral majority attempts to impose its views, but never in the case of the whole liberal agenda, which, of course, is completely an attempt to impose views. However, the phrase is used simply to draw selective attention to the coercive feature of all law. I seem to be getting a little bit close on time, so we have one more particularly interesting word that I'd like to end up on, and it's interesting because it's so hard to spot, and this is the word social. It was first used, according to Bob Nisbet at AEI, by Comte in France in the 1830s to distinguish relationships that were in society in the private sector as opposed to in the governmental or political or legal sector. However, today, since then, it's changed its meaning to an extent comparable to the change undergone by the word liberal. It means almost exactly the opposite of what Comte had in mind. Today, for example, you'll see I haven't asked Mr. Jockers to get the word social out of his computer, because I know that the thing would just scream in horror. There would be so many millions of examples. But we do, for example, see social goals,
agenda,
social aspirations,
social spending,
social justice,
social values,
social welfare,
social neglect,
social problems,
social
activism,
social
conscience, social responsibility,
social
science. But there is one social that you do not see. Socialism. Thank you very much.